Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in and feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com. Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
From 2400 Sports, Odyssey, and Major League Baseball, this is the PBP Voices of Baseball.
We bring you the people who bring you the game.
Hello, 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 and welcome into the PBP Voices of baseball. Ah, September approaches. What a great baseball month. I know another sport starts. I forget exactly what it's called, but we rage. We baseball fans rage against the dying of the light that is the baseball season as football tries to take over. But here's the thing. We thrive. We thrive because there are incredible playoff races all over MLB. There are teams on fire like Seattle. The Cubs are making a push here locally, and that's incredibly fun. The Dodgers look truly great and ready to battle the Braves again. So much good stuff. And there's incredible episodes of the PBP coming. Next week, oh man, I want to tell you guys so bad who the guest is next week, but I'm going to make you wait until the end, because that's how I roll. This episode right here features a man whose team is not playing meaningful pennant race-related games, but they've still had a pretty good year. The Washington Nationals have some good young players, a few interesting pitchers, a healthy farm system, and a manager and a GM who both just got contract extensions. So, Bob Carpenter, the Nationals play-by-play man, is enjoying himself, as he has been for 18 years as the voice of Washington. He spent two different stints with the Cardinals before that and also was at ESPN doing baseball and much more for like 16 years. But he is perhaps best known for his scorebook, which he developed in the 80s, started selling in the 90s, and I got to tell you, one of them sits on my desk right now. Got to talk to the man who wrote the book. He wrote the book, the Helping Friendly book. Here is Bob Carpenter on the PBP. Bob Carpenter, it is a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much for the time.
Good to be with you, Matt. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. So, you know, my nephew is a AAA broadcaster, and he will eventually hire and fire me because that's how the world works. But anyway, As I was just kind of breaking into doing a few innings here and there, he was an up and coming broadcaster, as he still is. And I said, so let's talk about keeping score. And he said, buy the Bob Carpenter scorebook, just go buy the scorebook. And so I went to the website, I bought the scorebook, and I've always known how to do it, you know, learned from my dad and known a little bit, but I've got it dialed in, and I, of course, think of you every time I score now. So, and that must be a common thread in your life, because I've talked now to so many broadcasters. Just a couple weeks ago, Howie Rose of the Mets uses the Bob Carpenter scorebook. There must be There must be dozens and dozens and dozens of working broadcasters who use the book. Have they all at different times reached out to you and touched base? Are you aware of the folks who are doing it with your tools of the trade?
Yeah, many of them have. And it's been very gratifying for me because, I started this thing back in 1984, which was my first year in the big leagues with the Cardinals. And it's good to hear from guys. In fact, we were at Yankee Stadium for the last 3 days. We're in Miami now. But I had lunch yesterday with Ricky Ricardo, who does the Spanish radio for the Yankees. And he had a young man, Emmanuel, can't remember his last name, at the table with him. And he was one of the single A guys at the with the Hudson Valley Renegades. I think his partner is Joe Vasile, who has used my book for a number of years. And I had just actually talked on the phone with Joe last week, and he had sent me a link, and I listened to his work and gave him a critique, and we had a conversation. And, you know, this young man said, "Hey, I've been using your book for a couple of years. You know, thank you so much." And I said, "The feeling is mutual." And, you know, Matt, the big thing is anything that that scorebook can do for young broadcasters or old guys like me to make their job easier, to keep them organized, and it's one less thing to worry about as you get ready for a broadcast or a telecast. You know, that's pretty much what our objective has been. Because like I said, back in 1984, when I first started working with the Cardinals on TV, the first couple of months of the season, I was doing the games out of a softball scorebook that I purchased at Buck Sporting Goods in Tulsa, Oklahoma, my hometown. And so, I figured there's got to be something better out there. Well, there was no internet in 1984. There was no way to go searching for a scorebook. So anyway, I went to Whitey Herzog, our manager, and said, "Hey, can I have a couple of blank lineup cards? I'm thinking about designing a scorebook that I can use, and I want to use the bench players and the bullpen like a major league scorecard has, so I can mix and match hitters and pinch hitters and pitchers as the game goes on toward the end of the ballgame." So, you know, when you look at the book and under the lineup, you see the extra guys. And then next to the other team's pitchers, you see the bullpen box where you write in those names. That's where all that came from a big league lineup card back in 1984. So I went back to the hotel one night. We were on the road. I don't know where we were. And I got out a ruler. I got out a legal pad and kind of laid out the grid and finally got it to where I thought it was a decent looking thing. I took it to a printing place down the street from my house in Tulsa. I think the first book had like, I don't know, 75 games in it or something like that. Cause back then teams were not televising every game, and a lot of teams were not hardly televising home games at all. Hmm. So I think that first book had 60 or 75 games in it. My original big league schedule that first year was 52 games. So it was more than enough for me. And then as time went on, I'd be down at the batting cage. I'd have my scorebook tucked under my arm and guys would say, "Hey man, where'd you get that book?" And I'd rip out a page and say, "Here, print one up yourself. That's where I got it. You know, I printed it myself." And eventually in the mid 90s, in 1995, we decided to start marketing the thing. We sent, brochures out to all the minor league teams that I could find in the Baseball America Guide. And then, got a pretty good response. I think we sold like 40 books that first year. Now we sell over 2,000 a year. And that includes the fan book, which is a smaller book I designed for fans to bring to the ballpark. Because when Sammy Sosa and Marco McGuire were hitting all those home runs in 1998, fans were bugging me like, "Hey, I like your book. I want to keep score of this historic home run chase, but your book's too big to bring to the ballpark." So I designed a smaller book for the fans. That's become our most popular seller. And that's, I tried to make a long story short, but that's kind of how the whole thing got started.
Well, we've got time for the long story. And the listeners to this podcast are more fascinated by this stuff than most audiences might be. So, you know, feel free. It's beautiful stuff because, I mean, there's a lot in there, but the language itself of scoring is such a beautiful thing. It's so unique to, obviously, to baseball, but it's unique to this country too. You know, it's like it's distinctly American. It's linguistic, but it's also it's just a very, very unique and wonderful thing. And the fact that everybody can do it, even within the constructs of the book or however you do it, everybody can do it their own little way. And as long as you understand, then it works. There's not many languages like that in the world, I don't think.
Yeah, and that's what I tell fans too. You know, however you want to keep score, that's your unique way of doing that. And, you know, like you said, everybody has their own language. I had never really thought about the thought you just brought up about it being uniquely American, because I don't know if anybody scores soccer games or football games across the pond. I don't know if anybody scores cricket games, you know, in other parts of the world. I don't know if you do that.
But I want to know now. That just made me want to know, like, what other games would even need such things?
Yeah. What other games is there a written record by a fan who is simply attending the game with no professional requirement to record the action or whatever? They just, you know, and I hear from a lot of people who will say, hey, on my dad's birthday, 10 years after he passed away, I was at the ballpark and my favorite player hit a home run. And that's a great memory for me. You know, and when I hear things like that, it really makes me feel good, because I feel like, Matt, at least to a certain extent, and I'm not taking all the credit for this, of course, but to a certain extent, with the book and the fact that people can have a written record, we're keeping the art of scoring baseball games alive, whether it's with a number two pencil. You know, when I was a kid and we went to games at old Busch Stadium to watch our beloved Cardinals, I think for 10 cents, you could buy a scorecard and you got a white pencil that had a little cardinal on it. And I just thought that, you know, as a kid, I thought that was the coolest thing in the world. Wow, I've got a pencil that's got a cardinal on it. You know, that's pretty cool. That'd be like a kid in Chicago, you know, with the C for the Cubs on it or the Sox on it. You know, you take that to school. Hey, look what I got at the ballpark, you know. And
I still, Bob, when I go to Wrigley, because now I'm addicted to scoring. So even when I'm in the stands now that I've gotten into it, there's something about it that makes me more mindful, makes me pay more attention to the game,
yes,
makes me feel more connected to the game. And it's I've grown to really enjoy it in the stands. At Wrigley, you can only go into the store, into the merchandise store, to get a scorecard and a pencil. Now they don't have the booth. They used to be somebody standing right there, like $2 for a scorecard and a pencil or whatever it was on the way in.
Yeah.
So it's more difficult to access now, but you can still do it. A lot of people still do it.
Well, and it's interesting. You just brought back a memory for me, because I remember walking into the ballpark in St. Louis and there was a little kiosk. I didn't know what a kiosk was back then.
Yeah.
But, you know, some little wooden stand. And I can still hear the guy. He was going, scorecards, lineups, Cardinal yearbooks, sporting news. He was selling all four of those things in his little kiosk. So you could get the scorecard, you know, which featured the lineup. He had the sporting news right there. You know, it was just, you know, he had the Cardinal yearbook there. And that was pretty cool. So,
Sporting news was the only place you could get box scores of other games at the time.
Yeah. You know, as well as your local newspaper. If your team was on the West Coast, then you had to wait an extra day, being in the Central Time Zone like we were. But this is a really interesting story. Years ago when I was still with the Cardinals, I'm thinking maybe it was around, I don't know, 98, 99, 2000, somewhere in there. They had their winter warm-up in St. Louis, which is, you know, their version of Cubs convention and other winter events that other teams do. And they had me do a seminar on scoring, and you know, and I don't know what the guy was thinking. It was in one of the whole Cardinal winter warmup was at this big hotel downtown by the ballpark, and they gave me a meeting room for the seminar, which you probably get 100 or 150 people in there. And on the program, and then on this sign outside the door, they did this big sign that said 2 to 3 p.m. how to score with Bob Carpenter. And I'm like, Could you have worded that a little differently, please? And anyway, once I got over the shock of seeing that sign as I walked past it into the room, we got in there and it was really fun. I mean, we had a great time. It was as much the fans talking to me and asking me questions as much as it was, me giving them my thoughts on scoring. In fact, it was really funny because an ex-Cardinal who also pitched for the White Sox, who was a St. Louis guy who I had worked with on ESPN, Jerry Royce, Jerry walked by the room and he saw the sign. And, Jerry's a real wise guy. He was a great practical joker and everything when he was with the Dodgers. I mean, stories about him and Tommy Lasorda irritating each other are just legend out there. Well, anyway, Jerry comes barging into the seminar right in the middle of it, and everybody recognizes him, of course. I mean, the guy's 6'6", and he's got the blonde hair, and I looked up, and here comes Jerry Royce, and Jerry Royce announces to the crowd, "Hey, folks, sorry to barge in, but I want to find out how I can score with Bob Carpenter." So anyway, at the end of this seminar, this gentleman comes up to me, and he's got his daughter with him. And she's maybe, 12, 13 years old. And they waited. I could kind of see him out of the corner of my eye. They waited patiently while I was talking to people. And, some people wanted me to sign the book, and they had Jerry signing their book. And this guy finally comes up to me and says, "Bob," he said, I want to thank you for this scorebook." He said, I've taught my daughter how to keep score. He said, "We will sit on the couch now on a summer evening or, a Saturday or a Sunday afternoon. We're not even at the game. We're watching on TV, but we're sitting down with your scorebook." And I showed her how to keep score, and now she's doing all of her own little notations and her little stick figures and all this stuff. And he said, "We're having a lot of fun with this." And he said, "It dawned on me, I'm spending quality time with my daughter scoring these baseball games that maybe, we never even would have thought of. We're spending time together as a dad and his daughter." And he's telling me this story, and I got tears coming out of my eyes,
Sure, sure.
I mean, I was so touched by that. And I'll be darned if about five or six years later, the Cardinals caravan, which is, the winter thing where the team went around to different towns and did autograph signings and all that. We were in Joplin, Missouri at Missouri Southern University. And we were doing something in the big auditorium there, and I was emceeing, and some of our players were there. Well, at the end of the thing, this young lady walks up to me, and she says, "Hey, you probably don't remember me, but I'm a freshman here at Missouri Southern now. I want to get into journalism. I want to get into broadcasting because I'm that little girl that came up to you with my dad at the winter warm-up like 6-7 years ago." And she said, thanks to my love of baseball, my dad and your scorebook, I want to pursue a career in broadcasting." So here I cut, here again, I got tears coming out of my eyes,
That's beautiful.
And over the years I've heard from different people around the country. It was really weird. One year a guy contacted me through my website. He said, "My wife and I were moving recently and I had a scorebook of yours that had a bunch of pictures in it of my mom and dad. And, it had games that I had scored, special notations." He said, "We lost the book while we were moving." He said, "I don't know where it is." He said, "If anybody would happen to return that book to you," because, my address is on the outside of the book, our Tulsa address where we ship from. He said, "I know it's a million to one shot, but if that book ever gets returned, will you keep my address and send it to me?" I said, yeah, sure. Well, I'll be darned if about a couple of months later, a book shows up in my mailbox in Tulsa, just out of nowhere. And the guy puts a little note and says, "Hey, I found this scorebook," or whatever this book is. He said, "I thought I would return it because maybe somebody wants this." I contacted the guy and he was just so emotional. And I sent him that book, and then I sent him another new one with it. And, Matt, those are things that happen. that you would never even think of ahead of time. I never thought about stuff like that. Yeah. I was just trying to come up with something to make my job a little bit easier. And here you end up meeting people all over the country. I've had orders from Great Britain, from Europe, South America, Central America, Puerto Rico, Venezuela, Japan. We've sent books all over the world. And, you know, and obviously a lot of books to Canada every year because of the Blue Jays. And there's still some, you know, frustrated Expos fans up there. But you know, these are things that happen that show you what a community the game of baseball is and what a close-knit group it can be, even though we're spread out all over the country and in some cases all over the world.
That's it. Those are wonderful stories. Thank you for sharing those. And it's the connectivity of the community, but it's also you got to the deepest and the most real of human emotions and our desire to connect with people. And it's an amazing legacy that you'll be leaving that you're also feeling actively here. It's incredible. And you've always had a passion for this, or maybe it's grown. Didn't you do a game towards the end of the national season? I think it was 2021, where you spent the whole game kind of demonstrating how to score through the broadcast of a game.
Yeah. And I give a lot of credit at the time to our video production crew at the ballpark. I mean, these are the, I think they call it Curly W Productions or something like that. And they're the ones who actually put all the stuff up on our video board. a very creative group of young people. I mean, they got their own control room. The thing is, it looks like you could run a network, you know, a national network out of this control room. They're all really good at what they do. And they came to me with the idea. And they said, "Hey, we want to do some videos," and so we did some other videos that were not live, like great moments in Nationals history, Steven Strasburg's first big league game back in 2010, and obviously that's back in the news now with the Washington Post reporting yesterday that Steven is probably going to announce his retirement in September. But you know, we went back through that game. I sat down at a table in one of the suites up there. They had a camera over my shoulder. They interviewed me while they were showing highlights of that game. And we did, I think, about a 10 or 15 minute piece on what that night was like. Max Scherzer's no hitters. He threw two of those. He had a 20 strikeout game against the Tigers. You know, Ryan Zimmerman walk-off hits and the Nationals in 2019 scoring 7 runs in the bottom of the ninth inning against the Mets to come from nowhere to win a ball game with Kurt Suzuki hitting a walk-off homer. And then, of course, a month and a half later, they're world champions. So, you know, it was their idea. And then our wonderful producer on our TV games in D.C., Chip Winfield, he was like, "I think that's a great idea. We need to do this." So we literally spent the whole night doing the game. They had a cameraman over my shoulder. Now, you know, he wasn't recording every single thing I wrote down. But if there was an unusual play or if there was a double play, because I'll write down DP 643, mm-hmm. but the runner above that, I'll also take that runner and I'll X him out at second base and then draw kind of a curvy line down to the 643. So you can look at that thing and say, okay, that's, you know, the runner was on first. He went to second. I draw an X with a little circle around it, which means he was retired. And, you know, just little nuances like that. Back when I was in St. Louis, a guy showed me something many years ago. In fact, I stole this one from Mike Shannon. Mike, if there was a guy got a base hit, he would draw a line with one short line through it for a single, two lines for a double, three lines for a triple. And then, of course, if it was a homer, HR. But I kind of stole that idea. And then
I love
another
that. I use that, and I wouldn't have done it without you and without the book. I love that. The other thing of yours that I love, I think it's yours, is the arc of the ball single.
Yeah.
So I can look back and see, because I use the bottom middle of the box as home plate, and then however the hit went, I can. And now I've gotten good at putting the arc in there so I can say, oh, yeah, he looped that one to left.
Yes. And that was the next thing I was going to tell you about.
Oh,
because
good.
A guy showed me, he said, "I track the direction of the hits." And I said, you know, and it just, it's like the light bulb went out or went on for me, because let's say we had Daniel Murphy for a couple of years in DC. The guy was an absolute hit machine, and he used the entire ballpark. In September, I could go back to a four-hit game he had in April, and I could say, yeah, the first time up, he hit the ball to left center for a double. Then they tried to pitch him inside, and he pulled one down the right field line. Then they tried to pitch him away, and he took one up the middle. And then his last time up, he hit the ball out of the ballpark to right center.
Yeah,
I mean, for a broadcaster and a fan too, those kind of details are invaluable, because we often go back through the book and look at games that have been played previously, and in some cases, a couple of months before that. So, yeah, that's where I came up with that idea. And then, you know, if it's a hard hit, that line will be pretty straight. If it's a bloop, I'll draw a little bloopy line, like you said. And you know, that's cool that you picked up on that. And the other thing that I started doing that I never saw anybody else doing, let's say a guy had a single to right center for two runs, you know, I would draw that line. But then at the lower left part of the box, I would draw two dots, and that means those are the RBIs. So you could, without having to track any other runners after the game or at a later time, you could look at that box and you would know that Daniel Murphy hit that ball to right center field in the sixth inning, and those two dots means he drove in two runs with that hit. And that's something, that's another detail that I kind of thought of myself. I don't know if anybody else was doing that or if they do it, but that's very helpful to me when we're looking back in a ball game, and I can look at that and boom, I know immediately he drove in two runs with that swing.
Yep. I do RBIs in the top right corner, but I definitely got it from you without a doubt. Those little dots.
Selling a little or a lot. Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Can I tell you about an innovation that my nephew suggested?
Absolutely. I'm always thinking, you know, I'm always open to new ideas, of course.
Well, but this is just a different usage for the four boxes on the bottom, the two boxes for bullpen and bench for each team. Because I have access to that on an app that I might be tracking, or, you know, benches are so small now, I know who the benches are. But for me, I was trying to expand my vocabulary. So he suggested something that he used to do, which is on the bottom left, he did soft contact on the ground. And then in the bullpen, he did hard contact on the ground. Then for the home team bench, he did soft contact in the air. And the home team bullpen, hard contact in the air. And wrote down all the different euphemisms you might use. I have blooped, poked, placed, lined, lofted, loop, popped, skied, muscled, smacked, roped, shot, bounced, chopped. So like all the synonyms, just to put it out there in the ether and make it available for my head as I hopefully grow more comfortable and competent saying what I see and using those words. So it's just a nice use of the space that a 25-year-old AAA broadcaster in Indianapolis is doing, and now I've picked up on using your book.
That's pretty cool. I think his vocabulary has already exceeded my capabilities. And, you know, but that's good. And that's the thing. You know, there's and in the broadcast book, not the fan book, but in the broadcast book, which is bigger, on the right side page, there, you know, there's a box in the upper right hand corner there. And there's all, you know, there's all, I just left that intentionally blank. You can fill in all yes. kind of team things in there. I use that. Like tonight, the Nationals are playing the Miami Marlins, and I'll use part of that box for the season series between the two, the all-time series between the two, and any other miscellaneous information. Like, you know, we have a kid on our team this year who's just having a great year, our right fielder, Lane Thomas. And when I write Lane in the number two spot in the lineup, often there's not enough room in that box to write out all the things that he's doing, because he's in the top 10 in batting average, hits, total bases, doubles, extra base hits. The guy's just having an amazing season. So sometimes I'll just write Thomas over in that box with my red pen, and I color code, you know, because like tonight the Nats will be red, the Marlins will be blue. Mm. Same thing when we play the Cubs. We play the White Sox, you know, they're going to be black ink. The Nats are going to be red ink. That's a kind of a throwback to my ESPN days when I was doing three or four basketball games a week. And color coding is what kept my, you know, dyslexic mind from getting confused when, you know, when I was doing all these different teams, like, you know, 6 to 8 teams in 1 week if you're doing 3 to 4 games. Sure. So anyway, I'll take some of that information about a certain hitter or a certain pitcher or something the team's doing and write that in that box over in that right-hand page. So I intentionally leave that thing blank just to let everybody have some room to write in all those notes that they may need to during a game.
Bob, I mean, see you later is such a phenomenal home run call and so distinct and simple at the same time. It's what it's supposed to be. When I ask you to think of a Nationals home run of consequence, a moment that you had in the booth that you love, that we should go back and pull and listen to, what's the first thing that comes to mind? I know that's large.
Yeah, for a home run call, it might be that Kurt Suzuki 3-run homer against Edwin Diaz against the Mets in September of 19.
Kurt Suzuki, see you later! The Nats have won it! 7 runs in the bottom of the ninth!
Given the fact that we were in a pennant race, and I'm sure Pat Hughes would tell you the same thing, you know, Jason Benetti would say the same thing. You know, all the guys who do play-by-play, and the situation often is what makes the call or the event, you know, what it is. So, you know, for one home run call, that would probably be it for me. Mm-hmm. And you may not believe this, Matt. I've never called a postseason game on TV in my life because we, you know, us local yes. TV guys, we get shut out once the playoffs come and we're not on TV. I did get to do 4 NLCS games on radio for the Cardinals in 1996 against the Braves. Jack wasn't feeling well, and they put me on with Mike Shannon for games 4, 5, 6, and 7. We won game 4, and unfortunately, we lost the next 3 to lose a chance to go to the World Series against the Yankees. So that was a bitter disappointment for me. Mm. But you know, so a pennant race and those big moments. I know that Brian Jordan hit a home run in game 4 of that series, and I got to call that helped beat the Braves. That was probably my biggest moment ever on radio. Hmm. And, you know, and then other things when I think about the Nationals, Jordan Zimmerman throwing a no-hitter on the last day of the season, the last batted ball of the season. In, I think it was 2014, Christian Yelich hits a line drive to left center. Steven Souza Jr., who is one of a whole bunch of AAA and, you know, Major League bench guys that were in the game at that time, because it was the last game of the season, and it meant nothing in the standings. But Jordan Zimmerman had a no-hitter going. He and Wilson Ramos, the catcher, were the only two guys on the field at the end of the game who were on the field at the start of the game. Everybody else was like AAA call-ups or some of our backup players. My current broadcast partner, Kevin Franzen, was on the field for that final out. Anyway, Steven Souza Jr. goes into the gap in left center and dives and makes an unbelievable catch on the very last split second of the entire season.
Kristen Yelich is 0 for 3 today. And a ball driven to left center. Souza. He's got it! He's got it! It's a no-hitter for Jordan Zimmermann!
Wow. The Nats were going to the playoffs, but they were resting their guys. They didn't know there was going to be a no-hitter that day. And he makes that catch, and that's a no-hitter. Then Max Scherzer comes along. He throws two no-hitters and a 20-strikeout game in his time with the Nationals, and, you know, win some Cy Youngs and other moments. But, you know, those are the ones that stick out. And whenever it's the anniversary of one of those games and our crew rolls in that highlight of Souza diving for that ball, you know, I'm not going to sit here and tell you I don't love listening to that, you know, you know, because I do. And, yeah, you know, and I think I put a pretty good call on it, and it was exciting. And then in the spirit of good television, I laid out for quite a while. You know, Vin Scully talked about that after he called the Kirk Gibson home run against Dennis Eckersley in the World Series that year. Vinny called it. He put a great call on it. And then he shut up, let the director and the producer and the crowd and the players do their thing. And that's what I did then. I probably shut up for the better part of a minute. And I just sat there and calmly totaled out my scorebook, because I didn't want to say anything that would take away from that moment. And to me, that's an important part of doing play-by-play. Nothing irritates me more than a play-by-play guy or an analyst who will take a moment like that when the crowd's going crazy, the players are jumping up and down, the producer is doing his or her thing, the director the same thing, the crew is showing you that moment. Those are moments, Matt, that don't always need words. Now, if you're on radio, yeah, you need the words, maybe with a shorter layout and some crowd noise. But when you're on TV as an announcer, you cannot ruin those moments by, are you kidding me? Or, you know, oh, I can't believe, you know, nobody wants to hear that at that time. They want to experience the moment as if they're in the ballpark. And that's my job as a play-by-play guy. And I think in those moments, we were able to do that.
That's great stuff. That's great stuff. All right. You've been very generous with your time. I just want to ask you a couple of quickies here. I have a bunch of different questions that I've asked most of my guests. Is there a specific item that you always like to have in the booth? Can be a good luck charm or a talisman or just anything that absolutely has to be there for you, sir.
You know, I use a straight edge quite a bit, if you can tell, you know, because I X out players. And so my good luck charm is a credential from the previous year that has my wife's picture on it.
Oh,
because, you know, we get a credential.
Yeah.
You know, we get a family credential so that my wife and the kids can come up to the booth when they're in town and all that. So, in fact, I'm looking at it right now on my desk here. It's a family pass. It says Debbie Carpenter on it, and it's got her picture on it. And that's my good luck charm that I use during the game.
Use that as a ruler, as a straight edge.
Yeah. That. And, you know, and before that, you know, I'd hold on to hotel keys and use those. And when, you know, when they would get jagged, then I would, you know, I'd get rid of those and get a new one. But yeah, that's kind of my good luck charm. And, you know, it's interesting. I think you were going to ask me about the see you later home run call.
Yes.
And we got, naturally, because it's what I do, I took us down a rabbit hole there about some of the other stuff. But when I was with the Texas Rangers in the late 80s, we had a bunch of home run hitters. Bobby Valentine managed that team. Pete O'Brien, first base. Larry Parrish, third base. Ruben Sierra, young switch hitter. Pete Incaviglia, the kid from Oklahoma State who never played one day in the minor leagues. Odubee McDowell in center field, who played in the outfield at Arizona State with Barry Bonds and Mike Devereaux. We had a bunch of home run hitters on that team. So when they would hit a home run, I'd just kind of go, see you later, you know. And that kind of became my home run call. Many years later, when I was in St. Louis, here comes Mark McGwire. And the ones that he hit were in the air for so long and went so far. That's when I started taking that home run call and started going, see you, you know, later, literally waiting for the ball to come down.
McGuire with 30 homers, 76 runs batted in. High fastball! See you later! Grand slam!
And that's when I started really drawing out the home run call. People seem to respond to that, and that's how that happened, and that's what I've been doing ever since.
Oh, that's great. I love hearing the way that that happened. Yeah, McGuire's would go high and far and take a while, and it pushed you along. That's awesome. Give me a broadcaster that you admired in your youth and one whose work you admire now.
You may not know this by listening to me, but I always kind of get attracted toward the guys who are what I would call maybe the minimalists. And Jack Buck was that guy. Jack had a way of saying a lot in very few words. Hmm. And because of that, Matt, he and Harry Carey were the perfect broadcast combo in St. Louis, because Harry, you know, he couldn't talk enough. Jack was totally different than Harry. Jack had a real dry humor, and, you know, and I later found out personally he could bust your chops and you didn't even know it until you thought about it for a minute. And then he would just look at you, and, you know, Jack was just that kind of guy. And every night when the game was, and this isn't when Harry was long gone off to, I think he went to Oakland and then the White Sox and then the Cubs. People forget Harry was in Oakland for a short time after he left St. Louis. But so Harry was gone and Jack was, you know, he was the number one guy. When he signed off after the ball game, he would say, "So long for just a while." Yeah. And I kind of, that's what I say on the air after the Nats lose a ball game. If they win, you know, I drop another "see you later" on them. But every night when Jack Buck said "so long for just a while," you were sad that the game was over and that the broadcast was over. Jack always left you wanting more. And I think that's a tremendous trait in a broadcaster. We have so many young people coming up now, Matt, because of the internet, analytics, they have all this information. And by golly, they're going to get that. They're going to cram that into the broadcast. Yeah. And as broadcasters, we got to be careful. We can wear people out with all that stuff. So I try to, my job, I feel, when I sign off every night, I want our fans to feel good, win or lose, about being a Nationals fan. Because even if we lose, and we had a bad game a couple of nights ago at Yankee Stadium, but we're still going to pull some positives out of that. But I always want to leave the audience wanting a little more. And I think Jack was the master of that. On a local level, you know, and obviously Vin Scully spans the past and almost the present, because to me, Vinny was the standard for everybody. You know, Jack was not that successful. Now, radio he was on Monday Night Football, but Jack and some other guys were not as successful on a national scale, you know, as Vinny was, because, you know, Vinny ended up on TV calling World Series. And, you know, so Jack, in my opinion, was one of the greatest ever on radio. Vinny, kind of a radio and TV thing he had going. And of some of the modern day guys, I'm really attracted to Al Michaels. I think Al is one of those guys who doesn't beat you over the head. He's not on the air, you know, hollering and screaming. Al always kind of leaves you wanting more. I think Jim Nance is the best. Jim Nance and Bob Costas would be the best hosts that we've ever had. I think there are better play-by-play guys than those two. But, I mean, you're talking Vince Scully and Al Michaels.
You're in the pantheon. You're in the pantheon here.
I mean, you know, those guys are floating around in their own, you know, stratosphere up there. You know, but, you know, those are guys who want you, who make you want to pull up a chair and listen to them forever. They're that good. Costas is probably the best interviewer that I've ever heard. I mean, he has just has a way of connecting with people and pulling unbelievable information out of them. You know, and then when I think about some of my friends that are local guys, you know, Pat Hughes is a dear friend, and I was really glad that I got to see Pat the very week he won the Ford Frick Award. We were in Chicago about a month and a half ago right before Pat went to Cooperstown. So I'm glad I got to see him. Howie Rose of the Mets and I have become very good friends over the years. There are really good broadcasters all over baseball, but those are the two guys I probably had the best friendships with over the years, just because I see them so much, especially sure. Howie, you know, because we're in the same division. But, you know, bottom line is, Matt, I'm kind of attracted to the guys who don't beat you over the head for 2.5 or 3 hours. Jack Buck, Al Michaels, and those are the guys who leave you wanting more when that game is over.
Yeah, but the so long for just a while, it tells people that this feeling of the loss that you have is not going to last, because that's the beauty of the sport and the season, is that you get to do it again. So it's one last little moment of comfort on the way out the door, isn't it?
That's the way I intend it, and that's really that's very good of you to pick up on that. And you know, and then of course when you win, see you later. You know, we're having fun. Yeah. You know, that it's like, you know,
hold on.
We're as happy as we can be, mm-hmm. and let's enjoy it. And you know, we're going to be pretty soon. We're going to be putting our head on that pillow, and we're going to have a good feeling about our ball club that night. So you know, and that's really come into focus for me with our team struggling since 2019, because 2020, the pandemic season, was brutal for everybody. Then in 21, we end up trading Max Scherzer and Trey Turner. In 22, we trade Juan Soto. But now we've got all these good young players that we got for those guys, and we're rebuilding our ball club. And, you know, Chicago's
got a manager, got a manager with an extension. You got
Davey Martinez, who's one of the greatest guys you'll ever know. You know, awesome. He's got a Chicago connection because he played for the Cubs, and he was on that staff with Joe Maddon and Mike Rizzo, our GM. His dad, Phil, tough, hard-nosed, old-school baseball guys from the Windy City. You know, I've really enjoyed getting to know Mike over the years. And I got to tell you a story about Phil, because we would see him in the press dining room at Wrigley whenever the Nats were in town. And I always knew how to get Phil going, because if we struck out 7 or 8 times the night before, Phil would get so worked up, he'd go, "Swing the blankety blank bat." And you know, you can fill in the blank there. But that was Phil. I just love talking baseball with that guy. And you know, sometimes I was late getting into the booth because I wanted to sit out there and soak in stuff from, you know, Phil Rizzo, the same way I did in St. Louis when I was a young broadcaster. I used to hang out in the press box when I wasn't broadcasting. If I had a couple of innings off or if I had a night off, I was hanging out with Bing Devine, the old GM who built those Cardinal teams back in the 60s. I was hanging out with Neil Russo from the Globe Democrat, Bob Brigg from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. I wanted to soak in as much as I can from those guys who've been there, done that. So my message to young broadcasters out there, you may think you know everything about analytics and stats, but there's a million things out there you don't know about the history of the game and things that happened while you were in diapers or before you came along. You need to seek out the guys who've been around for a long time to keep some of those stories alive and to regale your audience with some of those stories whenever you can.
That's a great place to cap it there, Bob Carpenter. I thank you so much for the time, and you're doing beautiful work with the scorebook. I love that you're feeling the personal connection of the stories that you shared at the beginning of the conversation, and thanks for this this role that you're playing in the continuation of the language and the continuation of the relationship to the game.
Well, Matt, thanks for having me on, and thanks to Ryan for getting you and I together and hooking this whole thing up. It's really been a pleasure, and I will see you later.
Oh, man, he got me. I didn't see it coming. Probably does that to everyone, don't you think, at the end of every conversation? I'll get you someday, Bob Carpenter. What a sweet guy, that man. Meticulous, focused, but also emotional. I enjoyed him enjoying the stories of human connection that the scorebook has brought into his life. And the origin story of his see you later home run call. Mark McGwire hitting them so long and so high that the pauses just developed naturally. And now it's a staple. Good stuff. All right, next week on the PBP. Told you I was dying to tell you.
The man who has come up more than any other broadcaster when young broadcasters and middle-aged broadcasters talk about the great ones working today. This is Joe Davis's guy that he referenced. It's Boog Shambi's guy. Maybe he's your guy as well. John Miller of the San Francisco Giants is our guest. I can't believe we got him. Been a prime target since the day this podcast idea was born. Next week on the PBP, John Miller. My producer is Ryan Porth. My collaborator here is James Vickery. The theme music on the PBP comes from the great Kurt Morrison of Tributosaurus. Find the PBP Voices of Baseball on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts. From 2400 Sports, Odyssey, and Major League Baseball. The PBP Voices of Baseball. I'll bring you the people who bring you the game.